Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
And I'm Grace Seegers.
And unfortunately, Haley could not be with us for this episode, but I am still excited about our topic this time because we're doing this in the wake of the Mandalorian and Grogu movie, which had as one of its main characters, Rada the Hutt, kind of a surprising choice to help carry the movie, and in some ways you could say a controversial choice. And as I was thinking about what we wanted to discuss this month, it occurred to me that we haven't necessarily done an episode about the controversial characters of Star Wars. So fans love to hate on certain characters. There's endless arguments about whether someone was right or wrong. And I'm really excited for this discussion because I do think we have two fun characters to dig into. And they kind of go to the heart of some of the big issues in the franchise. So I'm going to go first because I think that Grace has got a really interesting one that might people are probably not expecting. So I want to jump into mine. People have probably heard me talk on the show before about how I'm a fan of Mace Windu. I think he's a great Jedi. I think he's a great leader. And I think that he's very misunderstood. And we've covered a little bit of this in the past, but we haven't really dwelled on it. And I'd love to get Grace's response and see if she feels the same way. The core of the issue for Mace in the franchise is people really don't like the way he treats Anakin. They think that he is a large part of the problem with Anakin in the Jedi Order, a large part of the reason why Anakin falls to the dark side. But I'm here to tell you, in fact, Mace Windu is 100% right about Anakin. He correctly identified that Anakin is not suitable to be a Jedi, and he is a stickler for the rules of the Jedi Order, and people talk about that all the time. But I would again argue that that allegiance to the rules is correct because those rules are, for the most part, good. We've talked in the past about the policy on attachments, but I think it's fair to say that ignoring that policy is a significant part of what goes wrong for the Jedi in the prequels when they let Anakin join up despite having all these attachments and red flags. And so that's, to me, that is like the big thing about Mace that people, I think, get wrong about him. And there's also aspects of his personality that people don't like. He's kind of rigid. He's can be a bit taciturn and stoic. But again, I would argue that those are important qualities for someone who wants to lead the Jedi Order or help lead the Jedi Order at this time of chaos in the galaxy and corruption in the government. I mean, you need somebody who's kind of a steely-eyed cynic almost to take on the other forces at play and see through their lies and deceptions. And again, you know, in the prequels, the movies kind of establish him and the whole Jedi Order as really foils to Anakin. But I think, again, I would posit that we need to remember that Anakin is the one who is the problem. Mace Windu is the adult in the room. He has, you know, he shows remarkable restraint and discipline throughout these movies. There's even stuff in the Clone Wars to admire about him. I mean, folks might remember that story arc where Boba Fett tries to kill him, and instead of, you know, trying to get his revenge or trying to deal harshly with him, he basically just sort of turns him over to the cops and says, like, yeah, you're going to get a trial and that'll be that. I mean, this is a person who is kind of the opposite of Anakin in terms of how much he lets his emotions control him. And I think that leads people to just think of him as not having emotions. But I would, again, kind of encourage people to think of him as a shining example of the Jedi in terms of having emotions but controlling them. Being open to empathy, right? He cares for the people, you know, the plight of the galaxy. He's not, you know, cold, but he is sober in his judgment. And for that reason, I would posit that Mace Windu is one of the most controversial characters in all of Star Wars, and he is sorely misunderstood and underappreciated.
You know, it's so interesting because I was really actually just thinking about Mace Windu a few days ago, which is not something I typically say. That's not really, I don't go around thinking about Mace Windu a lot in my daily life. But I was talking to a friend about how the Revenge of the Sith novelization by Matthew Stover is such a shockingly good book. I always sound insane when I say it, you know, like it sounds crazy to say. Genuinely, the novelization of the third in chronology of in-universe timeline of the third Star Wars movie is a genuinely good book. But it's true. It's true. And there's nothing I can do about that. It's wonderful. But that book is so good because it really, and one of the reasons I like it so much is that it really delves into Mace Windu's personality and into, you know, how devastating this is for him personally, that he's dedicated his entire life to the Jedi. And then at the end, right before he fights Sidious, he realizes that essentially his entire life is a lie. And that the order he has been so dedicated to protecting is, you know, has been corrupted by the Sith for a very long time. It's a really beautiful, heartbreaking moment. But I did want to, I mean, so I'm a Mace Windu fan, but for the purpose of playing devil's advocate here, I would want to get your response on some of the ways in which that inflexibility may have negative consequences, not just for potentially the Jedi, but for himself as well. So, for example, when he is so rigidly, he tells Anakin, after Anakin tells Mace about Palpatine being Sidious, Mace is like, stay here. We are going to take care of this. And then, you know, he does end up getting into a lightsaber fight with Sidious. And yes, Sidious attacks first, but there is this sense of, would it have gone better if, you know, instead of just going off and saying, okay, the Jedi will handle this personally right now, and we're not going to tell anybody, is that really the best thing he could have done in that moment?
Yeah, I love that question, because obviously we'll never, you know, we can't ever know what would have happened, but the way that the factors at play really do a good job of illustrating why it's such a horrible tragedy that this whole situation represents. Because, so on the one hand, Mace Windu wants Anakin to trust him and trust the Jedi. Okay, so that would be a point in favor of bringing him. But on the other hand, everything Anakin has done, except for telling Mace that he thinks Palpatine is the Sith Lord, suggests that he is on Palpatine's side, sympathetic to Palpatine. He makes comments about how the Jedi are not appreciating the Chancellor. There's ample reason to believe that if you bring him, he is at best a question mark, an unknown, and at worst a liability. I mean, obviously, he ends up becoming a liability. We all know how it goes. And the people who criticize Mace say that only happens because by the time Anakin gets there, he doesn't trust Mace because Mace told him to stay behind. And he shows up and he thinks that Mace is trying to kill Palpatine, you know, covertly, right? And so maybe that only happens because Mace tells him to stay behind and he walks in on the almost coup de grace. I don't think so. I think Palpatine has groomed Anakin well. I think Palpatine has both overtly and covert and sort of subtly primed Anakin to see the Jedi in the worst light at all times. So I don't believe there's a world in which Anakin accompanies Mace, as, you know, per Mace's request, and actually helps him arrest Palpatine. First of all, Palpatine's plan depends on him being the victim. So there's no world in which he allows himself to be arrested. He fights to the death. Even if he thinks it's not guaranteed Anakin will save him, the best thing for him is to fight Mace and to do the thing he does, which is have the lightning come back on him and make it look like Mace is about to win. There's a lot of debate about, could Sidious have won in the end if, you know, Anakin hadn't intervened? I think so. I think he's probably the only person who's a better fighter than Mace at this point. But even if you think Palpatine was genuinely in danger of dying, that's the move. It is do the lightning thing, play to Anakin's sense of, well, we can't just kill this guy. And that, I think, even if Mace brings Anakin, I think in that moment, I think it plays out the same way. The question I think that a lot of people have is it really believable that the only way to take Palpatine down is to kill him. In other words, if you're Anakin, do you think that actually they could have arrested him? And I would posit, first of all, he's already killed several experienced Jedi Masters. He's fought the most experienced one, other than Yoda, to a standstill. So what makes you believe that you could actually keep him imprisoned, right? He's already revealed himself to be a person who doesn't care about the rules, who doesn't care about checks and balances and accountability. This isn't a person who's going to sit in a jail cell. So again, I think if you were to think about it logically, Mace's move is kind of the only move. But again, this is why I say it's such a tragic situation. That inevitably raises questions if you do kill him and Palpatine's plan fails. That raises questions in the public about a Jedi coup. And there's a lot of people who have speculated about what would Mace have done next, right? I don't think the Jedi would have taken over, but just the idea that no matter what they do, there's question marks in the air, you know, Palpatine has almost won even if he's killed. And so that's a very, like, if you're Anakin trying to parse out what to do, that thought of, like, we can't look like we're doing a coup. Are we actually doing a coup? Like, I think that's going through his head. I think he's uncertain. I think he doesn't know what Mace's intentions are. And I think that's part of Palpatine priming him. And I think that is why there was no better option for Mace. If he brings him, Anakin is susceptible to Palpatine and to all these questions about a possible coup. If he doesn't bring him, maybe he can deal with Palpatine cleanly without Anakin's impulsivity in the mix, right? He obviously counts on Anakin not showing up anyway. And I think that's kind of the best he could hope for. He was wrong, but I don't know another move he could have made that would have been more likely to succeed, which again just gets back to Palpatine was the ultimate mastermind because it's almost a no-lose situation for him. So I know I kind of rambled there, but I'm curious what you make of that.
As we're talking about this and I'm reflecting on it, it is kind of a sort of like a historical what if scenario where there are all these potential factors that, you know, if X hadn't happened, then Y wouldn't have happened. But ultimately, there's no way to know. And as I'm thinking about it, it's occurring to me that actually maybe how Mace treats Anakin is far from the worst thing that he's done and the worst thing we should be questioning, because, you know, Anakin is really erratic. He does have all of these really good reasons to mistrust him, even from the time when he is a child who has had a difficult upbringing. I'm interested now in thinking about the Mace's complicity and leadership in some of the Jedi's most morally gray at best actions. So when it comes to, the fact that he and the Jedi are using child soldiers in a war, when the fact that he is part of the Jedi leadership that allows for the usage of clone soldiers, of millions of clone soldiers, to essentially be cannon fodder. And he's a major participant and decision maker in that. And, you know, if we do have to bring it back to Anakin, the fact that he takes this child away from his mother and is like, well, tough nuggets, and we're not going to end slavery because that's not really our deal. Although I think that is perhaps less of a question than what about all of the bad things that the Jedi do, the compromises that they make in this era, and, you know, in part because of what they've been manipulated to do, but also they're making individual decisions to send out 14-year-old Ahsoka to fight a war. And she is just one of many Padawans who are doing that. So how do you account for those actions of his?
Yeah, I love this part of it because it's much more interesting than the Anakin stuff. I mean, I can sort of deal with the taking the child away and not ending slavery more easily because it's not the Jedi's job to, invade every planet and get rid of every system that is oppressive. They don't have the resources. They don't seem to have the legal authority. And it's not clear that going planet to planet and getting rid of systems like slavery is actually the best way to make the galaxy better on a piecemeal basis. And so I don't know that we could ever have seen that happen. Qui-Gon is the one who takes Anakin from Tatooine. It's kind of a fait accompli by the time he gets to Coruscant. It's questionable whether, it's questionable to admit Anakin into the Order at all, and Mace is part of that decision for sure. But much like the clone thing, and the sort of Ahsoka thing, which I'll get to in a second, if that is the basis for saying that Mace Windu is quote unquote bad, and I'm not saying you are, but I'm saying if one wants to make the argument that Mace Windu is in the wrong for doing that, so is Yoda, so is Ki-Adi-Mundi. You know, he's part of a decision-making group. He's senior to almost everybody else, but he can't just say something and get his way. And so he's one of several people who makes the decision, we will admit Anakin. He's also, I would say, the most vocally skeptical one. He doesn't believe Anakin is the chosen one, which I think, there's still a question in fandom of whether really it should be Luke who's the chosen one. But he doesn't believe in that. He doesn't think it's true, and he thinks that Anakin has a lot of red flags. It seems to me that he's overruled in that situation rather than him being a driver of that decision. The clone thing is much more interesting. And again, this is why Mace is kind of a great stand-in for the big picture philosophical issues of the whole trilogy, right? You have the Separatists who are threatening to topple the galactic government and create systems of oppression everywhere they go. They're eager to embrace slavery, right? All these kinds of things that they want to overrun all good peace and order in the galaxy. So what do you do about that? Well, you don't have a volunteer army of adults. You have a surprise army of children, accelerated aged clones. And you have, students and teachers of various ages and force skills who can be good in combat, right? In a sense, they're working with what they have. And that's not to defend the choice to send the clones out or to send Ahsoka into battle, but it's to ask the corollary question of what else should they have done? And again, that's why the prequels are so interesting to me, because there are no good decisions. It's not a good decision to use a clone army, to continue to have clones be bred, right? It's not a good decision to put a 14-year-old on the front lines of a war, but it's a better decision than not doing it. And that's kind of a tricky thing to say. But again, I think if you look at the situation that they found themselves in, what morally superior choice did they have? They can stand on principle and withdraw into their temple and watch the Separatists take over the galaxy. I don't know that that's better for the balance of moral good in the universe. I think that would be a tough argument to make. Now, I'm obviously not defending the choices that they make, because there is no defense for it. The only thing you can say about it is that it's better than the alternative, which, there's a lot of real-world examples of this too, where we do things because the alternative would be worse. There are still historical debates about the dropping of the atomic bomb, right? There's still a conversation about, did that save more lives by preventing an invasion of Japan, right? So it's not to say that this is good. It's to say that it's better than the alternative. But I'd be curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting question. And as you say, it has real-world historical parallels. But I do think it's always very interesting to look at who's deciding what the better alternative is. And, who are the people in power who are making those decisions, and who are the ones affected? Because let's say you have a situation where there's a side like the Jedi, which have a moral high ground, and a side like the Separatists, which are looking at the rot and corruption of the Republic. As an aside, Haley would have defended Count Dooku for this argument, and I think that there is a good point to be made there about the Republic is weak and it is corrupt and it is struggling with inertia. And so, yes, you could say on the absolute same side that the Separatists led by Count Dooku, he's having to make compromises too and get in bed with shady people for what he sees as the betterment of the universe. Now, I am not arguing that. I am just saying that as an argument that could be made. But regardless of which side you believe, as in all war, the question actually becomes who gets hurt. And yes, there's loss of Jedi dramatically throughout the war, and of course ending with the genocide of the Jedi, but it is the people on the planets that are being contested who are the ones who are most affected. And if you say to those people on the ground, you know, which side is the more just side, I think the answer is, you know, well, there is no justice here. As long as there is destructive violence, then what is the better side? And again, these are all just arguments that one could make and not necessarily arguments that I personally am making. But I do think that whenever we look at the question of, oh, well, was it better than the alternative? It's just important to think of who's determining what the alternative is and what stories are being told.
That is a common argument, especially about Count Dooku. And I wish Haley could have been here to talk about that. And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it later. You know, does he have the right argument about the Jedi? The one thing I'll say in terms of who's hurt and who's telling the story about what each side stands for is we can actually look at the evidence that's presented to us about what each side does. And the separatists are the ones who deliberately kill innocent people, who promote not just a bet, or I should say allow, but promote slavery and oppression. The Republic does not do those things. They have rules that they operate by. And so if you're in a situation where the separatists are doing what they're doing, do you let them do it or do you stop them? To me, there is no other question. You know, that doesn't mean that you are going to be able to uphold all your principles in the process. And I don't want anybody to think that I'm suggesting that the ends always justify the means. I wouldn't make that statement as a general statement. But in this case, if the only way to stop the separatists from doing what they're doing successfully is to use the clone army and the Jedi, I think that's the morally superior option. Not good, but better than the alternative. And I am sympathetic to the idea that the Republic itself does cause harm, but I am leery of a both sides, which I'm not saying that you're doing this, but there is, I see this online, I'm leery of a both sidesing of the Republic and the Separatists, because the text of Star Wars, the actual TV shows and movies and books, show us that one side operates by the rules, or as much as there can be rules, and one doesn't. One side tries to uphold the light when it can, and one side doesn't even care. And to me, if those are the two sides, there's one side that should win and there's one side that should lose. And I wouldn't justify anything to defeat the Separatists, but I would say that using the clone army is the better option than being steamrolled by the battle droid army.
It is, I will say, I love Star Wars, but it is a very kind of like at its heart, a very sort of elemental tale of good versus evil, and we've seen a lot of nuance and complexity in Star Wars stories, most recently in Andor, which I really appreciate. But fundamentally, there is always a clear good guy and a clear bad guy. It's like you're never going to argue that the Nazis made some points, you know. It's a lot harder to the wonderful thing about Star Wars is that it provides a really clear vision of what goodness can mean, even amid all of the difficulties and hard decisions. Like I'm thinking about the episode of Clone Wars where we see, I think it's the first episode where we see Yoda connecting with three clones and sort of telling them about the important things in life, and you know, that they're not just clones but are people. And you know, I think there's a lot of beauty to be found even amid the complexity, but also just on a meta narrative level. Like, I guess people can argue, they can both sides it, but there is a pretty clear wrong answer here, in a way that I think just, you know, is just another layer of this argument that we are having right now.
I want to briefly touch on Count Dooku because I think it's related to the conversation about Mace Windu and, like, you know, are his decisions the right ones? Again, he's a stand-in for a certain version of the Jedi Order. And I got to be honest with you, I don't have a lot of patience for the argument that Count Dooku was right. I mean, he identified problems with the Jedi, but he didn't go about trying to address them in any way that would be consistent with, like, good values. Like, he joined up with a guy whose goal was to destroy all that was good in the galaxy, and then he proudly led an army that committed all sorts of massacres and war crimes. That's not what you do if you sincerely want to make the galaxy a better place. And again, I think the text of Star Wars is fairly clear that his arguments about, like, well, we just need to get rid of corruption and the Jedi have lost their way, that those arguments are sort of just nonsense, you know, a tiny fig leaf on top of just true monstrousness. Like, there isn't a lot of textual evidence for the idea that he sincerely wants to make the galaxy a better place. He's just a monster who's using a convenient argument, and it's an argument that resonates because there's a grain of truth to it. But again, just because somebody makes an argument with a grain of truth to it doesn't mean that they're right in how they carry out those beliefs, if they actually hold those beliefs. You got to look at what he does, and all he does is add evil to the galaxy. So, you know, I think the conversation really should be more, what do we do about the problems he identifies, and not, like, did he do the right thing once he came to those conclusions?
Yeah, I think it's very, like, classic rich guy, because Count Dooku is a rich guy, but classic rich guy to be like, the system is corrupt, and because of that, I'm going to blow up the system, and it's going to be fine for me, like, I'm going to be fine, because I'm in control of the system, and, you know, no matter how hard the system blows up, it's never going to really affect me, and it's very much, you know, the classic, really just using an excuse to blow up the system in your favor.
So what could they have done, though? I mean, if Count Dooku had, instead of, you know, leaving the Jedi Order and becoming a Sith, if he had left but, you know, remained buddy-buddy with Yoda and everybody and said, I want to lead a working group, you know, to fix the Jedi Order. The Republic Senate is going to pass a bill. We're creating a bipartisan commission, a gang of eight, to fix the Jedi Order. You know, I think that a lot of what he seems, again, it's not really clear exactly what his critiques are, but I think his view is generally that the Jedi have become too close to the Republic government, have strayed from their role of sort of pondering the Force and just, you know, doing humanitarian projects. But what is your sense of if anything can be done about his critiques of the Jedi Order? Because I don't think you can really decouple them fully from the government.
Yeah, I think that the critiques of the Jedi Order are more to do with the way that the Republic operates and the way that the Jedi have become, like, they've become a governing and military body for the weak central government. Essentially, they're a paramilitary force by the time you get to the Clone Wars. Like, why is it the Jedi who are handling this ginormous civil war with their child soldiers and their gift clone army? Why isn't it the Republic that is really handling this? And I know that it's not that there are answers to that, which are dug into in the various Star Wars properties. But the issue, if there is an issue with the Jedi becoming too embroiled with the weak Republic, it has more to do with the operating systems of the Republic than, you know, not say the Jedi is flawless, but I think it has less to do with them. But we cannot spend time going off on how we would fix the Republic, A, because we've done that before, and B, because we do not have the time for it.
Yes, the last thing I'll say is you were saying Count Dooku is the classic rich person who's sort of insulated from his actions. And I would extend that to he has credibility as a critic of the political system because he's, you know, he was part of it. He has connections to it. So he fits that archetype too of a person who says, I've been inside this system, so you should trust me when I tell you just how rotten it is. So that's a compelling thing that he's able to pull off. But we've talked a lot about Mace Windu and the prequel era Jedi. I want to hear your controversial Star Wars character and why you think they're misunderstood.
Yeah, so first I just want to dig a little into how I came to the decision to defend my character, and we'll get to that in a minute. But at first I really struggled because I could only think of like defend an obnoxious character like Jar Jar, or defend a character who was unfairly maligned by fans and then by the narrative for primarily racist and sexist reasons, like Finn or Rose from the sequel trilogy. And I was just reflecting on, you know, there are also characters that are kind of like edgy, dark sidey characters that people come up with their defenses, but it's really just because they're cool. Like Darth Maul doesn't need me to defend him, or the other kind of like badass, dark sidey, but kind of have a point characters. And then that had me thinking about, well, what about the true dark side and the true representation of the dark side? And so that brings me to the character that I will be defending, and then him as a representative of the larger dark side. I'm going to be talking about the son from Clone Wars, who is himself the representation of the dark side, the avatar of the dark side. So in the Mortis arc of Clone Wars, there is this magical force planet that is essentially houses the physical manifestations of the light side, the dark side, and the kind of god figure, the father, who holds them in balance. So the light side is represented by the daughter, the dark side is represented by the son, father holds them in balance. And then, you know, of course, the son gets ambitious. He tries to kill and overthrow his father, but in doing so, kills his sister instead. And this teaches Anakin and us all an important lesson about how darkness can be the cause of its own destruction. And the father conveniently mind wipes Anakin for plot reasons that we won't go into right now, so Anakin doesn't remember any of this. But I think the story of the son is very sort of ancient in the way that it plays out. And when we look at the light side and the dark side of the Force, it's very influenced by the sense of cosmic dualism, that there is a light and a dark that needs to be in balance, the yin and the yang. And in various ancient religions and traditions, we see this idea of the light and the dark need to exist with each other, and they need to be held in balance. And so there is the argument that the sun is necessary because he needs to exist to have the light side in comparison. And there's actually even a quote that he has in the arc about something to the effect of, I'm not quoting it directly, but something to the effect of, how can you know about the light without what knowing what the dark is? And then on top of that, I think that there's something really tragic about the sun that again is very ancient in its sense of tragedy. It reminds me of the story of Cain and Abel, where Cain, the son of Adam and Eve, and his brother Abel. They have offerings for God, and God prefers Abel's offerings over Cain. And Cain, in his anger over being rejected by God, kills his brother. And the thing that is so tragic about these kinds of stories is that characters like Cain or like the son were essentially set up to fail. So the son exists to be a representation of the dark side, and yet you're going to be punishing him when he is exactly what the father has built him to be. Very similar as well to this idea of Lucifer being cast down from heaven, according to the apocryphal stories of, you know, he was the angel who loved God too much and God cast him down. That there's this sense of, why is this character being punished for just being itself? And the purpose of this character is to be the very representation of darkness inside every person. So why should he be rejected for acting as is in his nature? And why should his ambition be considered something negative rather than something that should be cultivated? Like, it's not his fault that he was made the way that he was. So that is my argument for the son, a tragically misunderstood character, and his larger place and the larger place of the dark side within Star Wars.
It reminds me of Luke in The Last Jedi, when Rey senses something dark on Octo. He says, yes, powerful light, powerful dark. He really does espouse that idea of balance, the notion that you can't have or even really appreciate goodness and light without something to highlight it, no pun intended, something to cast it into relief, something to show you how valuable it is, something to compare it to. I think with the sun, it's interesting because he's a manifestation of this concept of darkness, but he's presented as, and presumably he is, a person, an actual person, you know, a sort of a godly person, but he's not a concept. He's an actor who speaks and makes choices. And so that, I think, is what, for me, makes it challenging to sympathize with him, because, like, he's not, I'm struggling to decide, but, like, he, in each moment, he acts presumably through free will. Like, he makes choices to try to bring darkness about, to try to increase the power of darkness. He's not, like, trapped, he's not brainwashed into, like, doing what he does. And so whenever any being with agency tries to make the galaxy a worse place, or a darker place, a place with more dark emotions and sentiments, it's hard for me to sympathize with them. But I guess I'm curious what you make of the choice to have these elemental forces portrayed as people and given agency, because it kind of it tests our willingness to sympathize with somebody who is presumably making choices to add darkness, as opposed to just something that's fundamentally elementally dark, that doesn't have a will, that doesn't have a consciousness, that doesn't have agency.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what makes him so interesting and makes him the perfect representation of the dark side. Because it isn't that passionate emotions are necessarily bad things. It's when you let them rule over you. But I think that the son, similarly to Anakin, can be a cautionary tale in the way that you treat people, and particularly in the way that children are treated. And if the idea is nature versus nurture, if you are nurturing a child to have them believe that they are the literal representation of evil, and their sister is the literal representation of good. Like, yes, the son is making his own choices, and I don't think that we should deny him that agency, honestly. Like, he is actively deciding to, at this point, as a, you know, quasi-adult god figure, choosing to embrace that dark side. But it is in large part because he feels so rejected, and so very much like his father has always treated him in this one way, and yet also always punished him for it. And I think that there is that adds another interesting wrinkle to this concept of agency. And again, you know, Anakin fundamentally makes his own choices, and they are bad choices, and they are made by himself. But there are also ways in which, you know, his upbringing and how his, honestly, his gifts, but also his perhaps more overwhelming emotions, how they were treated in a sort of one-size-fits-all manner rather than specifically tailored to him. So I do think that there is an interesting lesson here in, as adults, you know, you can make bad, bad decisions, and that whatever happened to you in your past doesn't excuse those decisions being made. But there is also the issue of, you know, how were they treated as a child, if not to excuse their behavior now, then to try to ensure that this sort of thing doesn't happen again in the future.
This is why I love your choice, because yes, they are people who, I mean, I think we're supposed to assume that the people that they meet in Mortis really do exist and are people and are not just hallucinatory personifications of elemental forces. And so if that's true, you know, this is a real person, but also he, much like Anakin himself, is a stand-in for a prophecy of, you know, you represent this elemental force, and so we're gonna, as you said, Grace, we're gonna treat you like you are the avatar of that force. And so you are kind of trapped in terms of what you can get out of your interactions with other people. Now, in this environment, the only other people are his dad and his sister, so it's not like if you, Grace, were told, like, you are evil incarnate, now go out into the world and live your life, and everybody will treat you as evil incarnate. Like, that, I think, would be harder, right? Because there's more circumstances where you are going to suffer because of that. He doesn't have to go get a job or a home loan, right? Like, those interactions that in the real world where we would be stigmatized, like, he doesn't experience those. But in some sense, the loneliness of that place gives him fewer places to turn when he does experience it from his father, from his sister. And I guess my question for you is, what do you see as another option for the father if he sincerely believes that his son represents darkness and that there's something that's permanent about that, that no amount of trying to be conciliatory toward him will change that? If that's how he sees it, what could he have done to not neutralize, but sort of soften the blow a little bit of the resentment that is clearly festering inside the son?
Yeah, I think this is actually something that I wish Star Wars could have addressed more. But within this idea of balance, I think that there's not everything about the dark side is inherently negative or evil. So having strong emotions, feeling them deeply, having ambition, having a vision for the world, those aren't in and of themselves inherently negative things. It is when there is an excess that those things become problematic. And I think, you know, in the same way that, you know, if you have a child who is struggling with these similar complications, you know, and me as not a parent and with no expertise, I am just, I think very much in theory that telling someone it's okay to feel your feelings, but you can't hurt someone else because of them. And both acknowledging that feelings happen, that they are real and that they can even be, you know, justified, but that never justifies harming another person or another creature or even yourself. And I also think that the daughter is a very under-considered character, because she's really just kind of the object for the development of the father and the son. She doesn't really have her own personality beyond being the personification of goodness and light. And that's an incredible burden as well, to always be the good one, the responsible one, and to never be able to harness some of those more passionate emotions because you're too busy being the perfect one. I think that's an incredible pressure as well, in a different way. And that the true idea of balance would be to actually have balance within the son and the daughter, as well as represented with them as representatives. Because, you know, one of the great lessons of Star Wars is that everyone within them has the capacity for great good and great evil. And what matters is which path that you choose. But we can't forget that which path you choose is also influenced by your circumstances and your opportunities. So it's this very interesting concept of choice and free will that also kind of balances this sense of destiny and doom, and the idea that even within this larger pattern and larger tragedy that the path may have set for you, there are choices that can still be made.
Yeah, I agree totally about particularly the daughter being kind of underexplored as a person. She is clearly the object of a lot of that storytelling, not the subject of it. And I do think it would be interesting to think more about, you know, what can the father do? In a sense, they're all kind of trapped in their roles. You know, destiny has given each of them a job to do. And even for the ones who are supposedly of the light, it doesn't make their lives easy. Living up to that is challenging, in a slightly different way from, you know, trying to surmount the stigma of being part of the dark side. So just another reason why I think that Mortis arc was one of the boldest things Star Wars has done in the past 20 years, I would say, and fodder for a lot of great storytelling.
And the only last thing that I'll say as we talk about the Jedi is I do think that one of the larger failures of the Jedi is this denial, this sense of abnegation of that dark side which exists in everyone. And even if that is not the original intention of the Jedi Order, by the time that Anakin and the Clone Wars story is being told through various forces, that is what the Jedi have become, is this representation of a strict version of good without acknowledging some of the nuances and potential possibilities that come from the dark side, which is why an argument saying there are so many possibilities that come from the dark side are so seductive. But I think that really something we can all remember is, you know, the choices that are offered and, you know, the parts of the light and dark that live within all of us.
Yeah, it's funny that we started talking about Mace Windu and how, in my opinion anyway, he is right to sort of call out Anakin's emotional attachments as a red flag, and we're ending the episode acknowledging that there's more of a place for emotion than certainly the Jedi of the late prequel era allow for. The question is just kind of calibrating, you know, how you act based on what you feel, not suppressing your feelings, but tempering them and harnessing them. So I think that's a great place to wrap up.
That's a callback, ladies and gentlemen.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Hoth Takes. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you, Grace. This was a really fun conversation. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com or reach out to us on X or Blue Sky. We've got links to our social media profiles in the show notes. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music, which, as always, is the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a full archive of Hoth Takes episodes on our website, that is hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you're enjoying the show, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. We will see you next time. May the Force be with you.